The views and content expressed on the following program are provided solely for informational and entertainment purposes. They do not constitute legal advice. A podcast is not a substitute for retaining a competent, licensed attorney to advise you on your specific legal situation. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the show. It is time for Break the Business, where we empower indie creators and have some fun along the way. I'm Ryan Carella, and it is a pleasure to have you here this week. Oh my goodness. Gee golly gracious, do we have ourselves a show for you. There is just, I don't know how we're going to get it all in an hour on the radio. There are so many great topics, so many great stories, so many great pieces of news to share with you. First, how about a piece of news on a internal navel-gazing show note here. Starting next week, our April 18th show on Break the Business will be our first show officially on our new partner live streaming platform, Volume.com. We are so stoked for this. We love Volume.com. They have been such a great friend to us. We are excited to join their family as a featured partner program. We're so excited to join this excellent community of musicians and creative professionals. So if you're on Volume.com, if you know about Volume.com, you can check us out there if you love the platform as much as we do. Or if you don't know what Volume.com is and you're just looking for a really cool place to check some really good music out, as well as find Break the Business every week, you'll be able to do that starting next week, April 18th, Volume.com. You can check out Break the Business there for the live stream. Oh my gosh, we are excited about that. Also excited for our co-host this week. Happy as always to be joined by Katie Zaccardi. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Ryan.
Oh my gosh, what a great sight to see. I'm so happy to be talking with you. Oh my gosh, do I got something cool to share with you right on the front end. I know, Katie, that you are my kindred spirit in all things Taylor Swift. And I know that if I don't come armed and ready for every Katie Zaccardi week with a great Taylor Swift story, I know I have failed you as a host.
Yeah,
so
obviously.
We got that fixed here. So I got a Taylor Swift story for you, Katie, that I didn't even need to look far to find. It comes brought to you by my alma mater and also the school where I teach as an adjunct professor, the University of Miami. Go Canes. In the infinite wisdom of this magical institution of higher learning, the University of Miami, they have launched a new course that will start up in fall 2024. It's coming out of the School of Communication, but it is open to all students at the University of Miami. The class is, and Lauren, if you have the poster, I'd love for you to show this to Katie. The class is called The Mastermind of the Taylor Swift Brand. An entire 3-credit undergraduate course all about the Taylor Swift brand, taught by a really terrific professor at the School of Communication at the University of Miami. I know that if Katie Zaccardi were a college student right now, she would do everything. She would crawl over broken glass to take this course.
Okay, well, don't make me sound crazy now. But this is so cool. I studied music business at NYU, and some of the classes that I had to take were not nearly as interesting as this. And I really feel like this is such a great way to teach branding, the concept of it, using someone who is amazing at branding and in a way that people know her. People are watching this happen in real time. Anything that can make like learning more digestible, I am all for. And to be able to take a class that is this fun because it's about Taylor Swift, yeah, sign me up. I would be there.
And this is not the first time that the amazing institution that is the University of Miami has dabbled in a Taylor Swift course. A few months ago on the show, we interviewed Professor Vivek Jayaram at the law school at the University of Miami, who created a whole course about trademark law through the lens of Taylor Swift. So University of Miami knows how to please its student body and knows how to create some pretty engaging course titles. And so they've gone back to the Taylor Swift well again. And oh my gosh, Katie Zaccardi, has the student body responded quite positively to this. So registration opened up for this course at the beginning of this semester. It was a 150-seat class. I'm not even sure where they're going to fit this class because I don't know of a single place in the a single classroom in the University of Miami that has 150 seats in it. They'd have to put it in the basketball arena.
I was going to say that's a big class size, no? I don't know. I don't have a great concept of that because I feel like I was in a very small program, so
yeah.
But that seems big.
It's very, very big, but not big enough for Taylor Swift, because apparently the class reached capacity within 4 days of it opening up. So they raised the cap to 175 students.
Okay, wait, stop. 4 days? And you might sound that I'm saying this is soon. I don't know what my experience was at NYU because I feel like it was truly feast or famine when we were registering for classes. 4 days, I'm like, oh yeah, I would have waltzed right in there. I'm surprised that it didn't like get filled up within 30 seconds. That's what I thought you were going to say. So if you didn't make the cut,
you know
what? You're clicking faster.
That's actually a fair point. And also, as a fellow NYUer, Katie, I am intimately familiar with the Hunger Games that is the NYU course selection
Hunger
process.
Hunger Games is literally how I would describe it. It's like, but you have to know what you want, and if you don't get it, your whole entire schedule that you've mapped out very carefully is trash.
Well, either way, the class filled up very quickly. They had to increase the student cap to 175. That filled up, and there is currently a wait list.
Naturally.
Now, so for this class, 175 students and a very long wait list. Contrast that with the University of Miami class that I am teaching in the fall 2024 semester that has 18 students and a wait list of, let me just refresh it, zero. So, you know, we're kind of the same, me and Taylor Swift, in
Maybe
terms of...
Maybe you need to rebrand your... Okay, I have an idea. Take this class about branding from Taylor Swift, rebrand your class with what you've learned, and make it about Taylor Swift and the law.
I like this.
I'm saying you need a Taylor Swift branded course.
It's easy. It's simple,
like,
Ryan.
You're working at the university that is supportive of these ideas. You can totally find a way to, like, empowering the indie creator through the lens of Taylor Swift.
Ryan, I will start writing your curriculum right now. Number one. Taylor Swift, I think she copyrighted her signature, okay? That's got to be something. Number two, all of the people who have claimed that, like, or all of the people who had to give her songwriting credit because people said their songs sounded like hers, aka Olivia Rodrigo. Okay, that's like four classes of the semester right there.
That's right,
just on
that. For sure. Well,
and then you're done.
I don't even think I need to change the curriculum one bit. I think all I have to do, my class title is Business Law and Ethics. That's what I teach at the University of Miami. I think all I have to do is just change the title to Business Law and Ethics and Taylor Swift.
Yeah, yeah. Through the lens of Taylor Swift.
And, like, I don't have to change this. Like, maybe I'll just mention Taylor Swift's name in, like, one of the examples of one of the cases we discuss. Bing, bang, boom. I got 100 people showing up for my class. Easily done. But just kudos to the University of Miami for just really cool, engaging things like this that are just lighting up the student body. Yes,
I have a question.
Okay.
Do they have to pay and or give credit to the Taylor Swift brand when they are designing entire curriculum off of what she's done and has done? Like, does she get... I mean, they're using her image, her name, her everything to sell their course.
Great question, Lauren. And Ryan will actually be covering that in week 5 of his brand new college course, all about Taylor Swift and the law.
Thank you, Katie. I was about to give that answer, but I have to paywall it behind my University of Miami course this fall.
I'm your representative.
To get the students to sign up.
Yeah, exactly. Don't. It's top secret.
The short answer is no. By creating a class like this, they're not actually engaging in the goods and services that Taylor Swift sells, so there's no trademark infringement there. And if they were to use some of her copyrighted works in the class for an educational purpose, and they don't use more than they need to achieve the educational purpose, they'd probably have a pretty strong fair use claim. So there you go. All right. Speaking of music, Katie, Oh, I should mention before we get too far into it, stick around in our next segment, viewers and listeners. We're going to be joined by a terrific guest, a booking agent and the president of Bi-Coastal Productions, Jack Foreman. He's been on the show before. We very much enjoy his perspective. We don't get enough booking agents on this show, Katie. We need to get their advice. And so I'm excited to talk to Jack in the second segment. He's a great interview. All right. Before we get into our story this week, Katie, I wondered if you could permit me a small indulgence, a small wasting of your time so that I can get in good with a legal client of mine, if that
sure.
makes sense.
Sure, let's
so
do that.
I have a legal client of mine who I very much enjoy their business and, you know, want to do things to make them happy. And this legal client has a daughter. Her name is Susie Norris. And my client asked me if we would be willing to play a little bit of Susie Norris's song on our show, so that like it can get a little bit of a plug on SiriusXM. We're just going to get it out of the way very, very quickly and get on with our material. Like, is that okay? Like, it's like bedroom pop. I think you'll like it. It's your kind of genre.
The fact that you're asking me this has, is a red flag because something is awry here. But yeah, sure, Ryan.
It's
going to okay.
rock. Like
yeah,
it's not going to be
bad.
Yeah, I
give you my permission to
like,
play
the
song.
I know
song.
You're going to think I'm about to play you like some crappy thing and like it's going to make you mad. No, this is actually a really lovely song that she wrote. So
okay.
Here it is. All right, here we go. It's called Midnight Stargazer by Susie Norris here on Break the Business.
Constellations dancing, forming shapes in space. A celestial ballet put on just for our embrace. Each star, diamond, glistening up above, guiding us as we search for love. Midnight stargazer, reach for the sky. The universe is waiting, it's time to fly. Let your dreams take you high, higher than before. Midnight stargazer, you'll find what you're searching for.
That was cute. I enjoyed, I've been listening to that all day. And like, I thought when my client asked me to play this song that it'd be like, oh God, this is going to be so bad. And I actually didn't feel bad about like being at telling my client that I would play it because I think it's a pretty terrific track. What do you think?
I feel like this is a trick question.
Why? Because you think like if you say something mean, it's going to make my client mad?
No, I think I don't believe that it's your client's song. I think there is something awry here.
Well, I can't get anything past you, Katie Zaccardi. Because
I'll give my opinion when you tell me the truth, Ryan.
Because I have to admit, I did try to pull a little ruse on you.
Yeah.
The song was, in fact, not written by my client's daughter, Susie Norris.
Okay.
But was written by AI platform Suno AI.
Okay.
And so this is a AI platform. There's been a few incarnations out. A couple weeks ago, they released version 3. And so over the weekend, just me and while eating a bag of chips in 10 minutes, I created Midnight Stargazer with some very simple prompting, very, you know, a little bit of back and forth between me and the AI. In 10 minutes, we wrote that song,
okay,
which is, you know, kind of a banger. So now that you know the truth,
because
I can't get anything past you because you're a smart NYU grad.
Yeah, sorry.
What do you think about this?
Okay. It's like good, but I don't think it's like good enough, if that makes sense. First of all, I do love the topic. As an astrology girly, obviously I love a good little celestial song.
I did
moment.
Try to write a song that I knew would appeal to Katie Zaccardi. I knew my
that.
Audience here.
And I guess I shouldn't be too critical because it's just sort of giving lo-fi music, which works like, you need that kind of music. It's just very laid back. But it felt like almost a little bit underproduced. And the song topic, I suppose, was quite specific. But it felt lyrically stiff, maybe. What I am most impressed with, though, is the fact that I am over here trying to create a demo of a real song that I wrote using GarageBand AI drums. And I'm like, why can't I just make this go on the downbeat? But then you are using this program and it's just whipping up a whole beat, lyrics, and what I find most impressive is the voice, like the yeah. vocals. That is wild. So it sounds like a real song to me. Like, big picture, I would believe that that was a real song. I think is it something, and this is, you know, such a big conversation, but is it something that we have to like worry about as a threat? Like, no, I'm not threatened by that song of like, oh, musicians are going to lose their careers because AI music is just so good. But it is very interesting and cool and also crazy that we could do that at that level of quality too.
That was sort of the perspective I got. I found out about, I didn't even know about this platform until very recently. I was at a law conference at the University of Miami last week where some of the people were talking about this during a panel. And so, you know, I heard them play a song and I was like, you know, this sounds really, really good. And I was thinking like, okay, maybe like a team of like really big experts got together and like developed the song with AI's help. And it was like, no, I'm just some like law professor with no musical talent who made this. And you could just see the musicians like with deer in the audience, with deer in their headlights eyes, just trying to think about. But to me, what makes this mind-boggling, Katie, because you're absolutely right, this is not as good as the best songwriters in the world. It's not replacing Ed Sheeran anytime soon. But you need to think in the perspective of how far this technology has come in the last 4 months. Because 4 months ago, we did a segment on this show where we listened to an AI-generated song and spent an entire segment making fun of how terrible it was. So, Lauren, do you have the old video of the Anna Indiana AI song that was considered like the height of AI music 4 months ago? And I want you to listen to that song, Katie, versus what I just played for you earlier. Well, I'm not getting any audio.
No, but the animatronic, AI video is really creeping me out.
For the radio audience, it's like super uncanny valley, like scary.
Very uncanny valley. Did you have to pay to use the software to create it, or was it free?
There is a free version, which you know has got some limitations in it, but the paid version is like $8 a month, and you can make. And it's really like the technology itself is really dynamic. Okay, like you can. You know, you tell it what kind of genre you want. You can either supply your own lyrics or you can have it write lyrics for you or do sort of a combination of both. Mm-hmm. You have it create like a bunch of different versions and then you can find the one that you like the best. And it can actually, you know, I would imagine this technology could be a really powerful tool for people who have more songwriting talent than I do, because they'll be able to get more out of this platform than I will. But if somebody like me, who's, you know, not a songwriter, can get that song out of this platform with just a little bit of work, it's pretty impressive. All right, Lauren, do we have the video now? I see you're kind of working with it here. All right, here we go. Let's try this again.
Sitting at my favorite cafe, sipping my tea, it's Saturday, thinking about all he's done to everyone. This town is full of broken dreams, shattered hopes and silent screams. Somebody please help me.
We gotta hear the chorus, we can't leave yet.
Betrayed by this town, let's tear it all down. We're all just destined to fall. I've lost it all, the trade.
All right, that's all I can handle.
Why am I kind of into that, though? So.
Oh, no, it will get stuck in your head, believe me.
No, like that first verse of like what he did to me and everyone. It's like so true, girl. But no, that's creepy.
Well, then
I agree with you. The jump between that and what we just listened to is... That's huge.
Katie, that was 4 months ago.
Yeah, it's like concerning. I don't want to be that person who's like, AI is freaking me out, but AI is freaking me out a little bit, you guys. Just a little bit.
I mean, can AI write a better song than Ed Sheeran? No. Can AI write a better song than Ryan Carella? Yes. And that wasn't the case 4 months ago.
Yeah.
So imagine where we're going to be 4 months from now, a year from now. It's pretty wild. Now, what I would say is, and it's the same thing I've always said when it comes to AI, I tend to be an optimist when it comes to technology. I think we need to keep our eyes forward and realize that these tools can empower artists and not just replace them, in the same way that AI drums that you're working with are empowering you to be a better songwriter and producer, Katie, or synthesizers or digital audio workstation software. This is all technology that makes us better. And I think AI can do the same thing. Now, the challenge for Suno in all of this, this platform, is if they are serious about AI being an enhancement for humans and not a replacement for humans, is they now need to take this technology and add to it some tools that will help producers. So, for example, one of the things that you can't do with Suno right now is take the individual stems that are created by the song. You know, like, for example, if I'm a producer, I might like the bass part in that song, and I want to take that out and maybe put that in a song that I'm making and then be able to do stuff to it. You can't do that in Suno right now. And until you can do that, I think people have a pretty legitimate argument that, hey, this is a threat to us until you can show us that this technology can empower us.
I agree. And I feel like it should, like, I would want to use it in the way that I use ChatGPT or Chad, as I like to call him.
Chad.
Which is that I will go in, like, I had to write a press release the other day. I went in, I said, I'm lazy. Write me a press release, include this, 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 and this. You know, here's the tone. Make sure that you state this. Like, I gave him my notes, basically. And I still, sorry, I need to not gender chat AI.
No, I just like the idea of you actually starting the prompt with the words, I'm lazy. I don't know if you actually did, but if you did, that's hilarious. I'm going to start doing all my prompts with that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, don't tell the people I'm working for that I'm doing this. No, it's fine. It's a tool, right, guys? So anyway, I put it all in. It plops something back. And then I take that and I edit it. And I say, great, this is now a starting point. It saved me probably an hour of work to get to this point. And now I'm going to take what I like, change what I don't, delete what doesn't make sense, change. And I can always go back to ChatGPT for revisions as well. But I feel like that's how I'd like to use this. Like, I would like to be able to say, here's my song. Can you make a drum beat that's better than GarageBand that wants to ruin my life? And, like, give some prompts. And, you know, GarageBand, it's just like, hey, I'm vibing with this. What do you think? And you're like, no, please make it less complex and less loud. And they're like, okay, so completely different. And you're like, no, that's not what I wanted. So I, you know, if
and
I
now
can
a word
this-
from our sponsor this week. GarageBand, oh no.
Sorry, respectfully, GarageBand, you need to get it together. You are irritating me. But if I could have a little bit more direction for a demo, you know what I mean? This isn't even going into the studio. That I can get behind. But if it is gonna be something where, and I'm so curious to see what happens here, especially when it comes to rules and regulations, because what I can't get behind is people just plopping stuff in and then their side gig is they're selling songs to Selling Sunset that are just all AI generated. And these people had nothing to do but say, write me a song that should be in Selling Sunset. And it plops out a song that's like, work, girl, buy that house. You got this. And like, and they're, you know, getting massive royalty checks. Not that that's necessarily going to happen, but do you see where I'm going?
Hang on. I'm just typing into Suno right now. Work, girl, buy this house. You got this. I'm going to have that ready for next week. It's going to absolutely jam.
I don't know if it like, understands this, but tell it a song that would be on Selling Sunset.
I'm
a hyper pop vibe.
You absolutely, because you can give it a genre and give it like a scenario. So like if you can say to it a song that you might hear on Selling Sunset, and it probably know what you were talking about. And you can even enter in like a few lyrics. Like you can say like in the lyrics portion, I wanted to say like work it girl, buy that house. And then you fill in the rest, and it'll fill in the rest. Like, you could app, like, that's it is a function in this.
Am I a co-writer on this song with AI? Like, what happens next?
You are opening a whole warehouse of a whole case of cases filled with cans of worms.
I know.
With that question of what happens in the copyright world. Because here, you know, when a work it has some AI fingerprints on it. Because we know, all we know for sure in terms of the case law that's come out is if something is 100% created by AI, it doesn't get copyright protection. Copyright law has to have a human input. Now, how much human input? If I provide a prompt to Suno AI, but Suno AI does 98% of the work, mm-hmm. can that still be copyrighted? And the answer is, like the law hasn't figured that out yet, because copyright law is 18th century law trying to figure out 21st century music.
Yeah.
And it's a wild time for lawyers like me.
And I might be archaic for thinking this, but I really feel like we shouldn't be using these platforms until we have that figured out.
Oh my God.
Is that bad to say? Because this is so, what's it, then it, then everyone's just going to be suing people or getting in trouble and going crazy down the line because it's not clear now.
Well, it is. I mean, if you're talking about like we have to let the law catch up first, I mean, we're never going to have
good luck.
AI.
Yeah, okay.
And maybe, and maybe that's not the worst thing in the world, depending on who you talk to.
Yeah.
But like, because the law is scrambling to try to meet the moment here, right? The latest thing that has come out of Congress that came from Representative, I can't remember his name now. Adam Schiff. He's a big deal. He's going to be a senator probably. New bill from Representative Adam Schiff called the Generative Copyright Disclosure Act. And what this law would do is say to all of the AI platforms, the ChatGPTs, the Sunos, whatever works you have used to train your AI,
yes,
every song, every piece of literature, every piece of music, everything, you have to disclose all of that work, which basically is just like, it's chum in the water. It's basically like, okay, you have to tell the world all of the people who can now sue you for copyright infringement.
Yeah, and, but that makes sense, though. I don't like to. I'm really overwhelmed.
but again, I'm telling you, I think we have to look forward. Like, when people try to be like the Luddites breaking the mills, like or breaking the looms, like that doesn't work, right? Technology is going to happen and it can't really be stopped. What we want to try to do is figure out how we as musicians can be empowered by it and help us get to our next level. I once heard somebody say, AI can't take your job. Your job, however, can be taken by a human who is using AI. So I think as creatives, it is incumbent upon us to learn how to use these tools and to get good with them, because they are just as important to your creative tool set as a microphone is, or as the instruments you play on are, or as the DAW that you make music on. This is another tool that you have to get good at because it's going to help you get your creativity to the next level.
Okay, and do we have time for me to ask you a quick question, though?
Yeah.
Okay. What is your opinion on how things should be credited? Because like I just said, I feel like I worry that for some genres and aspects of songs, of background music or whatever, people who aren't really songwriters but are good at telling AI what it needs to hear will then be writing songs but completely 100% using AI, taking 100% co-writing credit, but they didn't really do anything. AI created the entire thing, and now those people are like taking opportunities essentially away from musicians.
Yeah,
should that be allowed? Like, should you be able to have a 100% AI created song and then be able to monetize that?
Well, if it's 100% AI created, then what you have is a situation where there's no copyright on the work, which means it's hard to make money on it because anybody can use it if there is no ownership of a copyright.
Okay.
Which means like the people at Selling Sunset don't have to pay you royalties to use your work.
So there's no benefit to doing that.
But again, where it gets tricky, are those situations where there's just enough human input in terms of the prompts you give, or maybe the adjustments you make to whatever the AI creates,
right,
that the law now says you have a copyright, and then uh-oh.
Yeah. And is there a way right now for us to distinguish what that level of human interaction is? Of like, well, I changed 3 lines of lyrics, so now it's my work of art. Or, well, I wrote the prompt and I included a lot of information, so now it's my work of art.
On behalf of the entire legal community, we'll get back to you on that. We're still working on that question. It needs to go through many a court case before we have a definitive answer there. It is unmistakably it's the greatest legal challenge facing copyright lawyers today is how we're going to answer that exact question that you just asked. Producer Lauren, hello.
So what is your advice to the indie creators out there, like our lovely co-host today, Katie, who said, I'm having AI generate a drum beat that I'm putting on my new track. What's your advice to indie creators using AI to produce work that they plan on copywriting themselves? Is there a fear that someone else will claim that drum beat? Do they have the right to use it and own pieces? What do you recommend them doing? I mean, the courts will pan it out, but now what do you do?
I feel pretty confident that when you're talking about music where, you know, Katie, you are heavily involved with the creation of the work. Most of the music, you know, came from your own mind and you just have like an AI drum beat in there.
Yeah.
That final work is going to be your copyright. That is a great deal of human input. Those are not, I think, the tough cases in the law. And in fact, there is probably an innumerable number of copyrighted works that are already out there, already making money, that do have AI stuff in them. Like anybody who's used GarageBand AI loops, for example. Those are still copyrighted works.
Right.
I do think that, you know, it needs to be something we're going to be mindful of. And I think the tougher cases are going to be the ones where, you know, like the Midnight Stargazer song, where it was mostly AI that did it. I'm the first one to admit it. Maybe I don't want to admit that on the air because if that becomes like a massive hit, now I'm not going to be able to get the copyright. But 95% of that was written by Suno AI.
Mm-hmm.
The prompt was mine. The prompt took me 45 seconds while I was eating chips. When the song was made, I did a little bit of stuff on the back end, changed a couple lyrics here and there that I didn't love, gave it some extra prompting and coaching to kind of tweak it and coax it to make it something that I knew Katie Zaccardi would enjoy. Is that enough for copyright protection? Ugh, who knows? I think that's going to be the tricky ones there. It's an exciting time though. And I want us to not be afraid. I think like every piece of historically, every piece of technology that has come our way in the music industry, be it synthesizers or electric pianos or digital audio workstations that you can fit on a laptop computer, every one of those innovations made musicians better, made creative people more creative, put more art into the world. Why do we necessarily have to believe that every innovation's been good for us except for this one? This one's not going to be. I don't buy that.
Okay, Ryan, mic drop. Honestly, that very well said.
So even though we don't know the answers, do you recommend registering your works that you're creating with the Copyright Office and seeing what happens?
Well, you should always register your copyrights in anything that you create because
even when you're working with your AI stuff and playing at home,
The trickier question is going to be when you fill out a copyright application, one of the things that you have to put in that application are what are called disclaimers, which is if there's anything in your work that is not your original creation, such as if you used a public domain song as part of your creation, you have to disclose that.
On GarageBand.
Because you're saying, right, like, I'm not claiming that public domain song. So if you had AI generate something for this song, you might have to disclaim that and say, like, I'm not owning that. I'm not claiming that because that's not me.
Right.
But unfortunately, for those kind of tricky judgment calls, you absolutely should talk to an attorney. Have them evaluate your specific legal situation. This is not legal advice. Please consult the disclaimer at the beginning of the show. Yada, yada, yada. This is wild times that we're in. I had another story, but we didn't even get to it because I knew it. Like, I should have known that we were going to get so immersed in. No, I knew we were going to get immersed in this one. This is a great story. So, and frankly, I think I'd like to get our guest, Jack Foreman's perspective on this. He's been in the industry for a long time. He works with a lot of creative professionals as a booking agent. Love to see what he thinks about the rise of AI. Let's take a break and we'll talk to him after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in 2 minutes here on Break the Business. Break the Business is presented in cooperation with Ryan A. is a law firm providing transactional entertainment legal services, including contracts, business formation, commercial law, copyright, trademark, and more. Ryan A. Carella, PA, Miami, Florida. rkpalaw.com.
Streaming services for Break the Business provided by LEK Entertainment. LEK Entertainment is a full-service entertainment company offering everything from consultations to full-scale events and productions, including audio and video productions, voiceovers, staged theatrical productions, script and music development, and streaming services. For more information, visit lekentertainment.com. LEK Entertainment wants to help you bring your story to life.
Thanks for supporting Break the Business. If you have a question or topic that you want us to discuss, email us at breakthebusiness@gmail.com. You can follow the host, that's me, on Twitter at Ryan KAIR, and you can follow the show at the BTB Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook, and on all major podcast platforms. And now, let's get back to the show. Welcome back to Break the Business, you lovely humans. Ryan Carella here with Katie Zaccardi. Hopefully not lamenting the rise of the robots that are coming for all of us as creative professionals. Of course not. We are brave and we know that technology will empower us and not replace us. You can check out Break the Business on all major podcast platforms, on Sirius XM 145, and on all major live streaming platforms. Starting next week, we will be joining Volume.com as a partnered program on the live streaming front. I cannot contain my excitement, Katie, for joining Volume.com. This is such a cool platform. It is an amazing community of musicians. I feel like we're going to fit right in. They already got a lot of really great talk programs about the music industry on Volume. I love the idea that we're going to join them, maybe do some cross-pollination, you know, go on each other's shows. The possibilities are endless, and I am just so thrilled to be joining this family. How does it feel, Katie, that you're continuing to grow your footprint and your empire, where at this point it might be faster just to name the platforms where people can't hear you than to name the ones where they can?
Yeah. Soon the reign will be mine. And by reign, I mean the reign of the music industry. So good luck to everyone.
May the odds be ever in your favor.
Yeah, literally.
Fabulous. All right. I'd love to get our guest perspective on this, all the stuff we're talking about. Let's go ahead and bring out our guest this week.
Chat Foreman's coming onto our show. Ready to share with us all that he knows. He's a booking agent, getting an artist the gigs, bringing advice, giving your career wings. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Our guest this week is an acclaimed booking agent and the president at Bi-Coastal Productions, representatives of shows including Animaniacs in Concert, Motown Legends, The Miracles, and The Guess Who. You can find out more about our guest's work by visiting bicoastalproductions.com. We are happy to welcome back Jack Foreman on to Break the Business. Hi, Jack.
What was that?
And how much writing credit do you get versus AI on that, Ryan?
Very little.
I want that to play every time I get on a Zoom meeting or enter any room. That's amazing.
We'll send that over to you.
We can totally send you that.
Thank you. That's
you're saying that you both. Thank you. Wait, you're telling me that you never, like, you don't have a theme song whenever you come on other people's podcasts? I find that hard to believe.
When I was a DJ back in college a million years ago, I had all these little drops that I would, you know, kind of touch on my mixer and on my little MIDI pad, and they were cringeworthy if I listen to them now. But it's, since then, I haven't had anything like it, and I really value it. So thank you. Thank you, guys.
It's our pleasure. You can thank the AI overlords for that. We miss you, Jack. It's been about 3 or 4 years since we've had you on the show, and it's been entirely too long. Before we get into the questions that we got for you, Jack, love to get your perspective on some of the things that we were talking about before the commercial break. I don't know how familiar you are with Suno AI and some of these platforms that are generating full songs out there with just very simple prompting. Let me get your perspective.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we're supposed to embrace all this amazing technology. We're supposed to constantly be forward thinking and convincing our artists to be forward thinking, right? You know, we want them to be always experimenting, always creating content in new innovative ways. But yeah, I mean, AI is something that's still a little scary to a lot of folks. I mean, a lot of my clients are, they're definitely above the age where they would even know what to do with AI off the bat, unless somebody really, really trained them. And, I think those that are starting to experiment are really finding some value with it. You know, my wife, for instance, is a school teacher, and she uses AI with all of her lesson planning and all that. And she convinced me to start using it when I'm leading seminars, when I'm, you know, building meeting agendas and things like that. And I'm a buyer in it. You know, I can't say I'm an expert on it yet, but I definitely am subscribing to the belief that this is what's next, and we have to kind of dive in and embrace it, or else you're going to fall behind. It's just inevitable. And yeah.
Well, one of the co-hosts that we had on the show, a guy named Gideon King, actually had an interesting thought about AI, and it's actually made me think of you, because he said, if AI sort of reaches its full potential in terms, or rather, if AI accomplishes what we all think is our greatest fears about what it could do in terms of replacing musicians, then the most important role that humans can play, and like the most irreplaceable of musicians, become the live performers, you know, the people in your line of work, Jack, because, you know, like AI can do a lot of things, but it can't be a human being standing up on a stage playing music and entertaining fans. And so when you think of it through that lens, does it make you go, oh, I'm so glad I'm in the line of work I'm in?
Well, it would, but the problem is that we agents are going to be the first to be replaced. I promise you that. People can't stand us the most, and they'll be working to get rid of us the fastest. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm not afraid of it. I think that I think it's going to become a bigger and bigger creative tool. But as long as it doesn't become the actual creative, then I think we're in good shape. You know, I think when people start using it to generate ideas rather than using it as a streamliner for what they're already using to create, I think there's a healthy medium that musicians need to find, that creators need to find. And I'm not worried about putting my clients out of work just yet. Although some of my clients, I guess the more technical of them, it could be. But then again, you know, we have shows like this show Illuminate. It's kind of like a light dance show that's on the Vegas Strip right now. It's finishing a national tour, and it's all technology. It's all. I can't even begin to explain it, because I'm just a paperwork guy like you, and I genuinely
my business card. Plugs it into ChatGPT. How to describe this?
Yeah, let me do that real quick.
I like paperwork guy. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, no, what's funny is we pretend to be lawyers. Well, you actually are a lawyer. So, but it's funny. I don't remember the last time I saw you. I think, Katie, didn't I do your podcast separately about 3-4 years ago?
I don't remember.
I think I did. Yeah.
Wait, I think we met in New York.
That's how, like, you know you've been in this business too long.
No,
did we meet on our podcast, like, or was it actually in the real world?
If I am remembering correctly, I think I met you after a show of mine randomly at, I don't know what music venue, but like ages, like 10 years ago. Nope. When was 10 years ago? Nope, not 10 years ago. Like 5 years ago, maybe.
That's really the biggest thing that's changed since I saw you last, Ryan, is I'm so much older, and I don't remember anything. I look older. I feel older. What's it been, like 3 years, 2-3 years?
It's been about 3 or 4 years. And like, I mean, think about where we were 3 or 4 years ago, Jack. Like, I interviewed you in the midst of lockdown, and you're in the live music business. So I couldn't possibly have been encountering you at what was a great time to be Jack Forman. Can you give us the perspective on, like, you know, what things were like 3 years ago when I last talked to you versus kind of where we are now as a live performance industry?
Yeah, we were basically standing there trying to look at each other and find a solution And the smart people were actually looking, they were looking up and they were looking within to try to find how to be most creative. And at the time I was peddling, you know, streaming is the future. This is that, you know, artists need to be creative and tech savvy in order to survive this, this pandemic. I'm so glad I was wrong that it was the future, because yes, it's still there, but you know, what's been amazing is that live music has come back with a vengeance. I mean, you look at the larger companies in the world, and they reported some of the best quarters ever in the last 2 years. I mean, it's really incredible how much it's come back, how much people have been excited to have it come back. And, you know, we're not forgetting how we got here. And, you know, my company and my roster looks totally different than it did probably the last time I saw you. And as much as it was traumatic and we lost people, we lost time, we all lost money, we all lost opportunities. It did get us to where we are today, where we can have that knowledge to really lead our people in the right direction. And yeah, it definitely brought us to our knees. It made us really decide whether or not we were the right people for this, because a lot of people left the industry. A lot of people decided, I don't want to be a musician. I don't want to be an agent or a manager or a publicist, whatever it may be. But I got to tell you, this last year especially, we've really felt the boom, and now the audience is really, really just flowing back in. It's very exciting, I got to say.
That's a really good point that you made there, because I'm going to, like, because, you know, I know that probably wasn't easy for you to admit that in the midst of lockdown, you seriously entertained the notion that, like, live music in person would never be the same, and that we all should, you know, just embrace the fact that we're all going to be live streaming forever, and that's the future of concerts. I will admit that was, I had that same perspective back in 2021. I was doing shows all about how artists need to just, like, fully move into live streaming, because people are going to get addicted to this as the way they watch music, and they're not going to go to clubs as much anymore. And boy, did I get that wrong. And boy, am I glad that I did. And right. I'm sure you're glad too.
Yeah, it was, you know, there were ways to make money in streaming, I'm not going to lie, but at the same time,
and much love to volume.com, by the way, we start there next week on Break.
Hell yeah. I listen to a lot of Volume podcasts, so you guys are in good hands, and
yeah,
very, very, very happy for you. So
good plug, Jack. Much
congrats,
appreciated.
Congrats on that. No, seriously. I think that's awesome. There's your drops. Yeah, no, but I'm so glad to be wrong. I got to listen back to our podcast. I got to find it somewhere. And
I would just like the record to show that you were also on my podcast in 2020. I had to double check the year, but yes. You were, and I have that link ready for our viewers and listeners. So
oh, man.
Since, if that was 2020, I've since, in addition to getting older, I've had another kid, and I that aged me immensely. I don't remember a lot of things. I stopped sleeping as much. I'm just total weird dad vibe right now. But I
love that.
From what I remember, we had a great conversation. We talked a lot about wellness, vitality, and a lot of great stuff. So hell yeah.
Yeah.
Katie.
Clearly, I know my memory is embarrassing.
Katie.
I used to have a podcast.
Such an avid podcaster. You don't even remember the guests on their show that were on your show when they're literally staring at you in the face.
I knew he was on, but the sequence of all the events were not happening in my brain correctly. You know what I mean?
Okay, in all fairness, we blacked out most of that year there.
Sure.
Wanted to, so I'm not holding anyone accountable for memories that year.
2020 was a weird time, all right? Like, a lot of interviews I don't remember. At one point, we were doing a telethon where I dressed up as a hot dog. It was weird. Like, the
and
whole thing was just a fever
better,
dream.
Jack, I fully remember you. I just don't remember my podcast.
That is okay. I'm just, like I said, I'm happy to be here with you guys, and it's great to see all that you guys are continuing to accomplish and offer creators in general, especially musicians. So
that's very, very cool. And I know you said you've had a lot of client turnover since the last time that we talked. I mean, is the website still up to date? Like, are you still representing the Red Hot Chili Pipers?
Oh yeah. 20 year anniversary. We're We're actually in the midst of, did it just wrap? No, I think it's either just wrapped or it was about to, a 8-week tour of the US. They're a UK based client and they are absolutely amazing. It's literally celebrating 20 years on the road, playing sold out theaters, clubs, and internationally playing some great festivals. It's just, it's a load of fun. And I mean, that's really been a constant of ours for ever since I've been with the company. You know, in the last few years, we've added a lot of different things like the Guess Who, for instance. You know, for me, obviously, I wasn't really alive or alive enough to appreciate that heyday of the Guess Who's music. But as a student and lover of music, I genuinely, it's one of my favorite bands of all time. And getting to book them and work with them has been unbelievable. The Miracles are a new one for us. I mean, everybody loves their Motown. Everybody loves their Smokey. And Animaniacs was mainly just a, as much as I'm a total fanboy for them, it's really just kind of a fun fantasy to work with people like that, whom I grew up watching as a child. And, you know, this, like I mentioned earlier, this show Illuminate has, it's just absolutely, it's taken us to a whole new world of really almost Broadway style touring, and it's been incredible.
Well, look, I'm sure you have a great roster and we want to hear, and like they all are worth mentioning, but we need to stop and talk more about you representing the Animaniacs in concert, because that's amazing. You should know, like, I am a massive fan of the Animaniacs catalog, as is producer Lauren. We spent a great deal of our childhood wearing out the VHS of the Animaniacs sing-along. The awesome. Only reason I passed my sixth grade states and capitals test when I took social studies was because Wacko taught me Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
But did you form it Columbus as
is
a
the
question
capital of Ohio? And it's, I mean, and just like, in fact, I'm going to go ahead and say this, Jack, like, I don't think the Animaniacs even need a booking agent. Those people make bangers. They can book themselves.
Yeah.
Like, that's an
don't.
Easy sale.
They definitely don't need me. I'm just there to kind of, just kind of, like I said, fanboy out. I mean, what's cool about the show is that it's literally the voice actors of that show and the composer of all that incredible Emmy award-winning music. And these guys are still working actors. I mean, Maurice LaMarche, who's one of the guys, I mean, you have Pinky and the Brain in the show with Rob Paulsen and Maurice LaMarche. And what's really funny about it is that, you know, they're doing it on stage, and we do it with symphony orchestras. We do it at small venues. We do it at mid-sized venues. We just did a sold out run at the Toronto Symphony Orchestra a couple weeks ago. And that was kind of a dream for them. They are like that in real life, which is the craziest thing. Is, you know, we'll go out to breakfast and they will be talking like Pinky and the Brain with each other. If you know, people will come up and say, "I'm sorry, were you doing an impression?" And they'll, you know, they'll tell them who they were. But it's unlike anything I've ever worked with. I'm sure it's unlike anything I ever will work with. But it's, like you said, it's a flashback to childhood. And the best part of it for us is seeing the people come up to them after the show and say, "This was my childhood," or this got me laughing through a horrible time, or things like that. I mean, that's my favorite part of it. I mean, as much as I love the show,
I can't tell you how insanely jealous I am that you have occupied the same room as Maurice LaMarche. I mean, that man is a damn national treasure. Like, viewers and listeners, if you could indulge me, like, just right now, just go to your Google machines, just type in Maurice LaMarche's name, just so you can see all of the amazing characters that man has brought into your life that you might not even know was him, and just how important of a human being this person is. And the fact that, like, you get to work with him makes me so very jealous. Now, and we could do a half hour with me just talking about how much I love the Animaniacs, but that wouldn't be very useful for the viewing, listening audience. So I do want to get some just good informational things from you, because we don't get enough booking agents on this show. And so you can give some great perspective on a lot of important topics. I've had a lot of artists always ask me this question: what's the difference between an agent and a manager? It seems like they do very similar work. I assure them that they don't. Those are very different job descriptions. And sometimes when managers try to do what agents do, they can get into a lot of trouble because you need a license for that kind of work. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, yeah. And in any kind of an agent, whether it's for motion picture, literary, live performance, it is our job to secure work, to secure jobs and paid opportunities for our client in whatever capacity that may be. You know, you've got managers who do still do that as part of their job. You know, publicists also do a fair amount of that because, you know, there are opportunities that they can only, that only they are privy to and only they are, you know, talented at getting. But our job is to go with what the artist's vision, goals, and career trajectory are and really help them navigate that roadmap. And there's kind of a misconception that an artist really is at the mercy of their agent. In reality, we work for the artist. And, you know, once you start looking at it as more of a partnership, that's when a lot of these relationships get better. But if you can, the best analogy I like to use is that if you're in a car with five people, the driver should always be the artist or the creator, and the manager should always be riding shotgun. The agent, and sorry, the attorney and the publicists are all sitting in the back offering occasional backseat driving advice, and the manager's turning back and saying, what time do we need to get there? You know, how much are they paying for that? You know, it's our job to also protect them, to make sure that they are not signing anything that they shouldn't be signing, that the deals they're getting are genuinely as equitable as they can be, and just basically advising them in the real professional parts of their work. But it's a very fine line in a lot of cases. You have some managers who do all the booking, which does happen still, but you know, agents will always have a place when somebody doesn't want to read or necessarily know how good a deal is for them.
Yep. I do think your car metaphor is a good one, although I think I know some artists who would actually like to keep their attorney in the trunk, but
right.
Other than that, I think it's quite apt, but a lot of, in, you know, in terms of the legal landscape of it, in a lot of jurisdictions, people who do booking and finding employment for creative professionals who are not licensed, as a lot of managers might try to do, can get into a you know, legal problems with that. There are laws like the Talent Agencies Act that can actually require managers who book gigs for their clients without getting an agent involved in the process. Those managers can lose those commissions because a talent agent's job is a regulated job. It's a job that often requires a license. And so you need people that are specialized in that kind of work. Now, I think a lot of artists, every artist who's listening to this would love to have more gigs and would love to find professionals who can help them get into new markets or help them get into venues that they wouldn't otherwise be able to get into. So what's the process like for artists who want to start getting involved with a booking agent? Like what phase of your career would a musician need to be at before they can say to themselves, maybe I should talk to somebody like Jack Forman to maybe to find me some opportunities?
They need to be ready. And that doesn't just mean ready for us, but ready to have an agent. Because a big part of it is thinking that, okay, I have somebody who's going to be booking me and that's it. They just, I have to sit back and be booked. When in reality, when you get an agent, your job as an artist actually becomes a lot harder because an agent is only as good as what you give them to work with. You know, we have a lot of artists that will come in and they'll have an entire strategy mapped out of exactly what they want to do. And we know our role in that sphere immediately. In fact, there's a lot of times where we're not even the only agent. You know, I have clients where we have somebody that just does Canada. We have somebody that just does corporate events and casinos and things like that. So it's important to know exactly what you're after and to make sure that there's enough to go around. Because obviously there's a lot of sharks and there's a lot of not so decent dealers in this world. But I genuinely think somebody is ready when they are on a trajectory where they are unable to carry the load themselves or their manager is, and they are on the cusp of taking that next step. But somebody just starting out, unless they are a runaway sensation for whatever reason, or a TikTok star or something like that, and even then may not be ready for an agent. You need to make sure that you actually have, you have a trajectory that the agent can work off of. Because if you leave them to their own devices to just develop your career plan on their own, it almost never works.
It's interesting that you brought up TikTok stars, because I think they are a great example of this phenomenon where fame doesn't necessarily translate to the kind of artist that can fill a venue, right? I mean, you see this all the time, Katie, where these TikTok stars like catch lightning in a bottle. They go viral for something. They become super popular. They get a song that's great. And they go, oh, I'm going to put a show on. And then they can't fill a theater because views on TikTok doesn't translate necessarily into people actually wanting to buy a ticket. I mean, you've seen this all the time, right, Katie?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I'm seeing it firsthand because I'm not booking people, but I think that people will have, just like people have one hit wonders back in the day, you hear a song and you're like, who is this band? And they're like, they were never seen again. I think that that's what's happening on TikTok.
No one has said that name in 1,000 years.
Exactly. I think that that happens all the time on TikTok, and it's actually, I won't say more than, I live in Nashville. I know some people. One of my friends in the building, I will just say this, I have spoken to him in detail because he is a phenomenal musician, and he was in a band that had like over 5 million followers on TikTok, and he specifically told me his experience was that even though they had that many followers on TikTok, and it was a consistent thing, and they had a fan base, they didn't necessarily see that in their streaming numbers or in their show draw. So I, you know, this is like me saying a secondhand experience of just what I've heard, but I think that is really fascinating. And actually my question for you, Jack, is how can you tell? Like, if you're taking on a client, are you only taking them on if they've proven that they can pull a certain amount of people in various areas? Or are you, because if you look, you know, I would say, are you looking at numbers? But in this case, you would be looking at this person's numbers, and the numbers are phenomenal. It's millions of followers, but it's not actually necessarily translating, even though those numbers look good. So how are you making the decision? And then just, I guess, continuing off the question of how does someone know if they're ready?
Well, first of all, I have to like it. You know, I have to be into it. I have to be, I'm a fan before all, honestly. I know it's kind of tacky to say, but it's true. I am a live music and live entertainment fan, performing arts fan before any of it. So I have to be into it, or else people are going to see right through it when I try to pitch this artist. So the agent really has to want to do it. They can't just say, oh, there's an opportunity to make some money. You can do that, but you're not going to get your best agent out of that. The funniest thing I can tell you is that the client on my roster that I book the most is an insanely successful TikTok and YouTube personality. It's a group called the Sharp Family Singers, and they have been they've worked with Disney. They've been on commercials. The daughter was on American Idol. They're involved in all kinds of stuff. They just did a song with Jack Black for that whole thing he was doing, the Britney Spears thing. I mean, it's funny, we don't book them a lot of shows because that's not where their data is making the money. They're making money in endorsement deals and corporate events, partnerships, licensing, but their fans are not necessarily going to go to Performing Arts Center, which is the type of venue they would play, and sit and watch a show. It's not their lane. I'm a huge data person. I wanted to become one more and more in the past few years because there's been this new resurgence of people who are in decision-making roles who never were before. You know, it was kind of an old boys and girls club for a lot of years. And then post-COVID, you're seeing a lot of people who may have been a box office manager or a marketing person, and now they're a lead talent buyer or a label executive and never were before. What are they looking at that the people with years of experience used to not need to look at is data. They're looking at Pollstar numbers. They're looking at ticket sales data. And you need to be able to understand when it's skewing in a misleading way. You know, an artist can come to me and say, I just grossed $50,000, sold 2,000 tickets in this market, and I killed it. And I said, well, you're a classic rock act, and you played in a baby boomer heavy market in Florida, where naturally that's going to happen and there's nothing else to do there. You know, is that going to translate when you go to Wichita or Milwaukee? Maybe not, maybe yes. And if it does, if there's vitality in it and you can see that they have been working to develop a fan base coast to coast or internationally even, that's when you know there's something to work with. You know, we have this guy, Lee Rocker from the Stray Cats, legendary rock star musician who they're reuniting for a short tour this summer. You know, he has a very unique niche following here, But then you go across the pond and you go to some of these countries where the Stray Cats sold more than the Beatles did, like Finland. They sold more albums than the Beatles did there. Nobody would ever think that or know that, but you know, whenever we book him over there, it's a totally different game than booking him in the States at a club or a small theater. Over there, it's an event. It's totally different. So you don't just need to see if this person has speed they're picking up, but you also need to be able to identify what that market is that you're going to pursue, because every client has a different need. You can't take a cookie cutter approach, or else you won't be a good agent. Really.
I love the idea of being able to walk through Helsinki right now playing Stray Cat Strut, and just everybody in the streets are just going to start dancing. Yep. Because apparently Finland can't get enough of this band. Our guest has been Jack Foreman. He's the president of Bicoastal Productions. You can find out more about our guest work by visiting bicoastalproductions.com. Jack, this has been awesome. We really appreciate you hanging out with us. Before we let you go, we got one last question before we lose radio here. Do you have any last tips for the indie creators out there to help them move their careers forward?
Yeah. It's that you are your, it's going to sound super cliche, and I'm sure you get this answer a lot, but you are the brand, and you need to firm up that brand and make sure that that brand is strong every single time that you debut it, whether it's on stage, whether it's on social media, whether it's in any possible medium. You are building a brand for yourself, and any artist that doesn't think they need to have somewhat of a business mindset is setting themselves up for, for potential problems down the line. And I guess the biggest tip of all is to have an absolutely incredible lawyer on call. In fact, I know one that I can recommend to your listeners, but that'll be for the next time we talk. And I say that in all seriousness, though, do get a good lawyer, because you never know when you will not know what you're doing. And it's folks like you that keep people off the streets. So we appreciate it.
Bless you, Jack. And let's not let 4 years go by in between interviews next time. I love chatting with you. Our thanks to Jack Foreman. Thanks to co-host Katie Zaccardi and producer Lauren, and all of you viewers and listeners for checking out Break the Business. We had a blast with you, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks. Break the Business.